Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the first official meeting of the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. I'm Senator Jackie Dingfelder and very honored to be here chairing this committee again. We have two new members that have joined this committee. They're two new senators. So this is their indoctrination to the legislature and to the committee process. We're really honored to have them on board. Two of our committee members are tied up, but they'll be here shortly. I wanted to just do brief introductions again, because the last time we did that, we had no audience, but we thought we'd repeat that. Many of you know that I represent District Northeast Southeast Portland, but have worked on environmental issues for 25 years as a professional planner, and in my private life, I work on many issues, everything from water to fisheries, as a private consultant. I am serving in my 10th year in the Oregon Legislature. I served four terms in the House in the middle of my Senate term, and it's an honor to be back, and very excited about having two new members that are very interested in these issues, and glad to have them here. I'd like to introduce my Vice Chair, Senator Olson, who is new to the legislature and legislative process, so I'm sure it'll be an interesting experience for him on the way, and I'm very, very excited to have him as my Vice Chair. And, Senator, if you want to just say a few words about your background, and we'll introduce Senator Thompson.
Thank you. My name is Alan Olson. I'm a senator from Senate District 20, representing the beautiful area of Clackamas County, right in the heart of it. It runs from Canby through Oregon City, Gladstone, Oak Lodge, and Johnson City. It's exciting to be here. Both Senator Thompson and myself were excited to be on Natural Resources. My background, basically, I've got a degree in chemistry from Purdue University, but I love to build homes, and I design and build custom homes. And as you well know, that market is a little bit thin in the last few years, and we hope to turn that around so that we can get our Oregonians back to work. It's a pleasure to be on this committee. I'm looking forward to working with every one of you, and I'm looking forward to bringing Oregon out of the tough times we're in and into a new age. So thank you very much, and I look forward to working with all of you.
Great. Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Thompson, if you want to say a few words.
Good afternoon. My name's Chuck. I'm from Hood River. My district includes Hood River County and quite a bit of Clackamas County, the Sandy, Mount Hood area, Welch's up in that area, Boring, Estacada, Damascus, clear over to Clackamas Town Center. So it's a really spread out, pretty big district, but a lot of the areas kind of farming. My background is I'm a pear grower from Hood River. Done that for 3 to 4 generations over there. So I was this was kind of a natural committee to me. I've been trying to convince Chairman Dingfelder that we need to call this Environment, Natural Resources, and Ag Committee. Maybe after a couple of years here, we'll get that name tweaked around a little bit.
I thought you said a couple of beers. Sorry.
Well, maybe a couple of beers. Yeah, we'll work on that. But like Alan, I'm also glad to be on it. I just hope that we can make it through the afternoons without nodding off once in a while. If that happens. Okay. Glad to be here. Thanks.
Senator?
Floyd Przonski, State Senator, District 4, parts of Lane and Douglas counties. I'm grateful to be back on the committee. I guess this is my third. But anyway.
Maybe in your previous incarnation.
And look forward to the topics that we have to work on. And I'm glad to hear that we may be having an ag committee come back. Since I went to Texas A&M.
Go Aggies.
And, of course, I would be remiss if I did not introduce our wonderful staff, and we're very fortunate to have two experienced staffers that are working on our committee. Beth, if you want to introduce yourself, and then we'll have Sue say a few words.
I'm Beth Petrino, the committee administrator. I've staffed this committee for a while, and I'm pleased to be back. And please let me know if you need any information about the committee. I'm happy to help.
I'm Sue Hampton, and this is my second year on the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee, and this is my fourth session.
Great. Thank you. And Senator Hass does exist. We haven't seen him in a while, but I did see him on the TV. I think his committee was running late. So
it was. There was actually a kind of a gridlock there. I had my sunglasses on to try to get through without being noticed. It didn't help.
He's been dealing with some very big issues, and so when he comes in, we'll let him tell us a little bit about his background. And this is his second session serving on this committee as well. With that, I just want to mention that the agendas, you know, be a little bit different order. Oh, there he is, speaking of the devil. Senator, we just went through and introduced ourselves, and we heard that you were causing a ruckus at the other end of the Capitol.
Yes.
But if you'd just like to say a few words about your background and in your district, and that would be great.
Mark Hass, my district is up in the Beaverton area, Washington County. I was just chairing the Education Committee, where we're going to restructure our higher ed system. And I've been in the legislature 10 years.
Thanks. And your second time serving in this committee?
Yes. Yeah. I'm a sophomore.
So I was just mentioning that the agenda's a little bit changed around. We have some people that drove here from far away, so we're going to accommodate them and let them testify first. But we are first going to hear from the Water Resources Department, where, as you see, the informational meeting is the first part on the Integrated Water Resources Strategy, and I'd asked the Water Resources Department to come and give a progress report. For our older members, or more senior members, we've been tracking this now for the past couple of years. For newer members, I've asked them to provide the background of how this integrated strategy got started. And so we're very fortunate that we have the directors of three of the agencies that are working on this that are going to be here to talk about it. And then we're going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 127. And then we'll go back to 122 and 126. So just want to let folks know. So with that, I'm going to open up the informational meeting on the Integrated Water Resources Strategy. I'm going to ask the directors of the Water Resources Department, Department of Environmental Quality, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife to come forward. Thank you all for being here. I know you're very busy, and you got all the good news about the budget today, so I'm sure you're glad to be here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Phil Ward, Director of the Oregon Water Resources Department, and I am really proud to be here with two fellow directors, Roy Elliker from Fish and Wildlife and Dick Peterson from the Department of Environmental Quality. Director Katie Koba from Agriculture sends her regrets, but she...
I heard she's in Hawaii, though.
She is in Hawaii, probably not even thinking of us right now. So, But at any rate, Madam Chair and members, with that, I'll kick this off, and then both Mr. Elliker and Mr. Peterson have a bit to add here. And certainly, if you get into detailed questions, we have some senior staff in the room that are very engaged in this project that we'd make available to you whenever you wanted to visit with them. House Bill 3369 from the 2009 session directed the Water Resources Department in close partnership with the Departments of Fish and Wildlife, Environmental Quality, and Agriculture to create a long-term strategy for how Oregon meets its water needs in the years ahead. And so we're talking about all of Oregon's water needs, its fish needs, its people's needs, its industrial needs, its agricultural needs. And so we have embarked, since we were given this charge during the last session, on this modest undertaking. So this strategy is designed to address current and future uses both, because we have unmet current needs, in-stream and out-of-stream uses, and both surface and groundwater. So essentially the strategy is we were charged to address all different types of water needs and uses in the state of Oregon. We were directed to consider things in building this strategy like population growth, land use changes, climate change. And certainly, we were directed to involve a broad array of stakeholders in this effort. The bill itself requires that we complete a strategy for you all by December of 2012, but it also required us to come now and tell you how we're doing. So that's what we're up to today. Over the past year, as a part of this effort, We've consulted with Oregonians from all around the state, representing a wide spectrum of interests, and gathering their thoughts about how we meet Oregon's water needs in the years ahead. Believe me, we have gotten a tremendous amount of input. There is an 18-member policy advisory group that has met five times during the interim, working on this issue. There's a 15-member state agency team that has been very actively involved in this effort. There's an 8-member federal agency team that has joined us to assist in this effort as well. We held 11 open houses around the state, average attendance about 75 at these, all the way from Ontario to the Oregon coast to here in the Willamette Valley. We held what we called one virtual open house online. We conducted more than 30 stakeholder workshops, so when there was a group like a conservation group or an agricultural group that wanted us to come and talk about what was going on, we tried to make all those invitations and did make over 30 presentations in that regard. The Legislative Commission on Indian Services sponsored a tribal water forum where this particular effort was the emphasis of that forum. We have a listserv now in place that serves over 900, that has over 900 subscribers. We've received literally hundreds of public comments from Oregonians expressing their thoughts on how water ought to be managed in an integrated fashion in this state in the years ahead. So we developed a detailed work plan that we're following, and there's a set of issue papers that are currently out on the web for their second public review that outlines in detail the issues we're facing. But, Madam Chair, we have, to me, one of the highlights of this effort has been to have the very close partnership of these agencies you see here today. And with that, I'll turn things over to Mr. Alliker to handle the next part of our presentation.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Ward.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Roy Alliker. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And, Madam Chair, I did want to thank you. You had some role in the passage of this bill last session, including making sure that all four agencies were joined at the hip in the coordination of this bill, and I appreciate that very much, as do all of us, including Katie. I just wanted to cover a few critical needs, because really the critical needs and critical issues here is really the heart of what we're going to be bringing forward later here in 2012. So when you take a look at those, we have really the four agencies, and let me speak for my own, we are really having some of our top folks really spend a lot of time in coordination with this report. We're very proud of the effort so far. In particular, some of these critical needs, we're working hard, so when we roll this out later next year, we really have some good definitive information on in-stream and out-of-stream needs and demands statewide and both regionally, really identifying what our state water resources are in terms of groundwater and surface water, storage and seasonal water potential or storage potential as well, and also taking a hard look at the coming pressures we'll have on that state water resource, including population growth, climate change, land use, municipal and industrial supply needs, and really the role of conservation, which is more and more very much critically identified as a major way to meet some of these coming demands. So that's a big part of what we're working on right now. I think Phil and all the agencies have done a stellar job in reaching out to the public, making sure the public is aware of what we're doing here right now in state government, and trying to get initial feedback on all the issues they'd like to see addressed or somehow dealt with in this final report and strategy. And so I think we're off to a good start, and I think Dick was going to make some further remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Dick Peterson, Director of the Department of Environmental Quality. And like Director Ward and Director Alliker, I'm really pleased to be here. And also I'd want to say that we're not just here just at this meeting to talk to you. I mean, we're present, including Director Koba, in a big way as this whole integrated water strategy develops. And we're as agencies are very committed to it. At the point, and also I wanted to compliment the staff of the various agencies that are working really hard, not only with outreach to public and getting that information, but also the policy the advisory committee that's been formed to come and help us this. They've really rolled up their sleeves and represent a really broad group of interested folks that are concerned about Oregon's water resource needs. Now, from this point forward, we're going to start working on recommended actions, and that's going to be where really the meat of, if you will, of the strategy is going to come together. And the primary goal of the recommended actions is not only understand to meet, but to meet Oregon's water resources needs in an integrated fashion. I mean, I think one of the things that we certainly learned and certainly learned from the groups that we work with is that us as agencies being good government and working together and paying attention to what the water resources needs are of the state is the very best for Oregonians. And that's where we're really rolling up our sleeves. And some of the things have been highlighted already, but certainly some things that are coming forward that are probably going to be a big part of the recommended actions are around certainly looking at where we have data gaps and need information there to make integrated decisions. And really, how do we make those integrated decisions in the highest priority where things need to be integrated from an agency and government perspective? Certainly looking at, we're hearing about needing to strengthen our water conservation, water management practices across the state. And really, how do we develop... how do we help develop the above and below ground storage needs of the state for water into the future? And certainly looking at improving in-stream flow and water quality protection and restoration needs. And so the next steps really are by this fall of this year, we'll be releasing for public review the recommendations that we're developing through the advisory committee and with the agencies plugged in. And that'll be a rich review and a rich release so everybody can react and respond to that. And certainly with the goal of by the end of next year coming with a really serious recommendation moving forward with our water resources need in an integrated way. And, speaking not just for DEQ, but all the agencies that are involved, this is really serious business for us. Water, as known as my fellow directors have pointed out, is stressed in this state, and there's a lot of need, and we want to be able to meet all the needs in the state in this integrated fashion with everybody's input and involvement. So we'll not only be coming at the end of 2012 with the strategy, but we'll have lots of opportunity between now and then to get feedback, and I'm certain we'd be happy to report back as you desire, Madam Chair and committee members, and I know we're going to be speaking to the on the House side in the same update Thursday, I believe. So anyway, that's the end of what I wanted to tell you, but again, I thank you for inviting us here today. I'm certainly pleased to be here and report on the progress that we're making.
Great. Thank you, gentlemen. And I also want to mention that there is a lot of information on the Water Resources Department's website, mm-hmm. all the minutes, white papers, as you mentioned, and certainly encourage members, if they would like to look at that information, there's much of that is available on the website that they didn't bring forward here today. But with that, we'll see if there's any questions for any of the members. No? You guys are getting off easy.
But it's only the first day.
Yeah. Rest assured, I'm sure you will be coming back. I certainly appreciate all of you being here today. I'm sorry Katie couldn't be there, but I wish we were all in Hawaii with her. But certainly, we'll probably ask Katie to come in and make sure and give her perspective. I look forward to further updates as you move forward and appreciate the hard work of all of your staff. And I also want to mention that there's many people that are serving on the advisory committees that are donating their time and spending, I know, a full day or many days meeting with you and your staff. So appreciate, I know some of them are in the audience, that the time and effort that many folks from around the state are providing input as well. So thanks.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members.
Thanks. So with that, we will move on to opening up a public hearing on Senate Bill 127. Mm-hmm. I'm going to to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 127, and I just want to mention to members, we'd planned to have a public hearing on this bill. There were some issues that arose, and the chair decided that we needed some more work on this bill, and so I was going to postpone the public hearing, and then I found out that there were some folks that were coming up from Klamath Falls to testify on this bill. So I know that we have Andrea Raby, is that right? And Roger Nicholson. Roger, I know you're back there. Didn't want to make you turn around and drive back home, so we're going to open up the public hearing to get your testimony on the record, and then we'll close the public hearing and move back to our other part of the agenda. So thanks for being here today, and for at least you had a nice day for the trip, right?
Yes, traffic was not bad, yes. And the weather was beautiful, right. So we appreciate that.
Right, and just a reminder, if you can state your name for the record, and if you do have written testimony, you can hand it to Sue, and then she'll pass it out, but welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for hearing us. We appreciate you taking that time. My name is Andrea Robbie, and I'm an Upper Basin irrigator. My family farms and ranches within the Klamath Basin, and I'm here today to express strong reservations about Senate Bill 127, as is currently written. And it's for a number of reasons. When you read the bill narrowly, it does not appear to convey the authority to the department that the department does not already have the authority to exercise. Furthermore, if you read it broadly, the bill may convey authority that I find really problematic. For instance, if you look at Section 1D, or 2.1D, the bill would appear to provide OWRD authority to bypass legislative oversight in applying for, accepting and spending grant money from virtually any private or public source. In Section 2.1b, the bill would appear to functionally repeal an entire important section of the Oregon Water Law, and that would be ORS 539.300 through 539.350. Finally, if it's passed, the bill would supersede and settle in favor of Water Resource Department in a lawsuit currently being litigated in Marion County that alleges the Water Resource Department has knowingly violated that section of the law that Senate Bill 127 would functionally repeal. ORS 539 provides the exclusive authority for OWRD to adjudicate water rights. If you look at ORS 539.220, it provides for a single adjudication process and forbids any negotiations regarding water rights outside of that single proceeding. In short, it forbids side deals. If you look at ORS 539.300 through 539.350, it provides authority for Oregon Water Resource Department to conduct negotiations to determine the scope and attributes of any rights to water claimed by any federally recognized tribe that may have a Federal Reserve water right claim. However, that same statute requires the department to make all negotiation in which the department participates open to the public. They need to provide public notice to the public of the negotiations. They need to allow for public input through the director and provide regular reports on the progress in the negotiations to the public. Moreover, when the department and a federally recognized tribe have reached an agreement, the department is required to submit an original copy of the completed agreement to an appropriate court and notify all holders of water rights that may be affected by the agreement. This provision was undoubtedly adopted into Oregon statutes because all of adjudications must be judicial in nature that involve tribal water rights held in trust by the federal government in order to comply with the federal McCarran Amendment. In the event that the federal government finds those adjudication procedures administrative in nature, the federal government is authorized to take over the procedure and adjudicate the water rights in a federal court. The Oregon Water Resources Department actively participates in the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement. In confidence, behind closed doors, the negotiations went on for several years. The department is a signatory to the final agreement. The department is also a signatory to a strict confidentiality agreement, controlling release to the public of any information regarding the KBRA negotiations. Further, the department has failed to file the agreement in an appropriate court and failed to notify relevant holders of affected water rights. A lawsuit is currently under litigation in Marion County Court to determine if the department did violate existing Oregon statutes. and what remedies the department must take to rectify that breach of Oregon law. Senate Bill 127 would appear to render that legal action null. By changing the law to allow the department to negotiate and enter into contracts and other agreements with federally recognized tribes without complying with the open negotiations notification currently required by law. So first I must request that Senate Bill 127 is not adopted by the committee. Furthermore, if the committee does plan to move the bill forward at this point or some point in the future, I would respectfully request an amendment that excludes the KBRA and any associated pending litigation from jurisdiction under the Senate bill. The amendment is specifically worded to preserve the decisions regarding the ongoing litigation to the Marion County Court. This legislative body has a long history of not attempting to influence court action until that action is fully progressed through the judicial system. I would request that this legislature should preserve that excellent record and uphold that. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Roger.
Thank you, Chairman Dingfelder and committee members. It's a pleasure to be able to talk here. And it seems awful early in the session to address you, but once again, my name is Roger Nicholson. I'm from a family that has ranched in the Fort Klamath area since the 1890s. I'm also a founder of Water for Life, as well as I'm president of Resource Conservancy, a nonprofit which represents Upper Basin irrigators in the Klamath Basin. I'd like to address specifically how 127 and allowing agencies to do the things which happen in KBRA and which would be apparently legalized in 127 is wrong and is bad public policy. When KBRA started, it was a relicensing. When the process started, it was a relicensing for PP&L and the Klamath Dams. When it became a settlement for the whole Klamath Basin, we requested a mission. Understand that my people, Resource Conservancy, represent the largest acreage-wise, the majority of the largest acreage of the Klamath Basin irrigation community. The Water Resource Department representative I met in the hallway, AG representative, also Attorney General's representative, and requested admission to that committee. We were turned down. We were turned down. The state of Oregon knew we were turned down. And the state of Oregon went ahead and sat on that committee with a very, very large group of irrigation community not present. The net result could be expected. The final document and that which was signed on by the state of Oregon called for 30,000 acre feet of water to be removed from our irrigation community. Now, mind you, there was no public input on this. This was behind closed doors. And the document itself came out that you don't change it. There hasn't been a state of Oregon hearing for public input on this. It's a take it or leave it process. This is terrible public policy to allow that to happen. And it did happen. I could go on with a number of things that are stretching state law or violating state water law within that final document, but I'm sure that those will be addressed in different forums and are not somewhat site-specific. But my comments are merely directed at how bad it can be for your citizens to allow agencies to do things like this. One specific example, to have an agency and to legalize through 127 an agency to sign contracts with an Indian tribe. My goodness, the only level of enforceability with the U.S. government is a congressional act making it a treaty level base with an Indian tribe. Instead, the state of Oregon is proposing to take and be able to unilaterally through agency, not with commission oversight and not with legislative oversight, to unilaterally do what the U.S. government can't even do, the bureaucracy, except through congressional action. It makes no sense. And the big part that makes no sense is due process issues and so forth. Not only are ourselves as irrigators were denied access to this KBRA process, the general public was. That's the reason you hear the comments and the very, very negative comments about KBRA. The public was excluded from that process and never, ever has been asked for input by the state of Oregon with an official hearing. Should the state of Oregon be part of that process? Instead, now it is, becomes very apparent for a so-called amateur observer, and maybe that's what I am, that we're trying to backfill with Senate Bill 127 to illegal activities of the past. I would dearly encourage this committee to either drastically amend Senate Bill 127 or it should not pass. It is bad public policy. Thank you. I'd be glad to take questions.
Right. Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions for the witnesses, Senator Prasansky?
Not really a question for them, but more, I understood the chair said that this bill wasn't ready to come out. There's some additional work being done. Do we know what the substance of the amendments are or if it addresses any of the issues that they've raised?
They've submitted an amendment, and that not necessarily.
Okay.
So we're talking with the department about it. So, any other questions? Okay. Thank you both for coming here today. We certainly appreciate it. I'm sorry it was such a long drive for a short hearing, but certainly appreciate your input. And at least we were able to accommodate making sure we got your comments on the record.
Thank you for allowing us to participate in the
Absolutely.
Process.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, with that, we don't have anybody else signed up. Did anybody else want to testify on the bill right now? With that, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 127. And we could, I'm wondering if we should just do the other water bill and then we can let the water director go. Okay, so we're actually going to hear more water. Sorry, Vicki. You'll be the easy one at the end, right? We hope. Senate Bill 126 is a bill that we're going to open up the public hearing on. Since we have the Water Resources Director here and their staff, and then we can let them go. So I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 126. Beth, if you can provide a background, the Water Resources Department come up and talk about that bill.
Chair Dingfelder and members, Senate Bill 126 clarifies authority of the State Board of Examiners for Engineering and Land Surveying to issue certified water rights examiner certificates to registered professional land surveyors, registered professional engineers, or registered geologists meeting the criteria established by the Water Resources Commission. It provides for reimbursement by the board to the department for expenses related to the examination and makes some other clarifications regarding continuing education. You should have in front of you a staff measure summary. There is no revenue impact from the bill. There's also a paper indicating that there is no there's a minimal fiscal impact, so there was no statement issued.
Okay, thank you, Beth. And if you guys can start from scratch, because I'm not sure everybody knows what a water rights examiner does. Maybe you can provide a little background on why this bill is necessary.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brenda Bateman with the Water Resources Department. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on Senate Bill 126. This is a measure that would ensure that certified water right examiners receive continuing education in water right laws and rules and would ensure that the state has the authority to address any problems that may arise during the course of this work. So by way of background, certified water right examiners, or CWREs, as I'll be calling them, are trained surveyors, engineers, and geologists who have passed professional exams that allow them to document and confirm the location and beneficial use of water. These professionals are a very important part, or a very important link in the water rights chain of events, and they help us get to the final step, which is certification of a water right. Occasionally, however, situations do arise that we need to address or that the state needs to address, either requiring further corrective action or training, and this bill would clarify the ability to do that. So there are two main points, I would say, to this bill. First is ongoing training. We have found in previous years that CWREs who go through a specific training course that's offered by the department are less likely to make mistakes when submitting their claims of beneficial use. Other professionals that are also operating in these circles, land surveyors, engineers, who are also licensed, already have continuing education unit requirements, and so this would put them on par with other professionals in their field. The other piece that we were looking for as part of this bill was to speak a little bit more clearly to the roles that the agencies play in all of this. So the department historically prepares, proctors, and provides and scores the exams that professional CWREs take. And the Oregon State Board of Examiners for Engineering and Land Surveying, we call that acronym OSBEALS, then issues the license to the CWREs and manages the license renewal process.
By far the worst acronym I've ever heard. I would never want to be called that.
Yes. We are close partners in this process.
Yeah.
So in terms of the proposals that are in the bill, I just wanted to lay out some of the specifics. First, the bill does clarify and talk about the role of these two entities. And so OSBEALS, while it's responsible for issuing the water right examiner certificates, the department itself actually proctors and administers the examination. So this bill lays out a little bit more clearly that OSBEALS has the ability to collect those fees, and then the department can come to them for reimbursements for the related costs of the work that we do with them. We just wanted to lay out very clearly here today that the department would not request reimbursement from OSBEALS without a written agreement first, and would make sure that OSBEALS has an opportunity to put rules in place that would operate that reimbursement program. So we want to give them an opportunity to get their rules in place first, and then we would proceed with the implementation of this bill. Secondly, the OSBEALS board may adopt rules to regulate CWREs. And as I mentioned before, other professionals in very similar fields already have professional conduct rules in place that establish professional development standards or continuing education requirements. So that's addressed here as well. And finally, this bill allows the state to address problems as they arise. This might result in the revoking, suspending, or modifying of a CWRE license if necessary. So this bill clarifies that language and matches authority that's actually already in OSBEALS operational statutes and rules. So we wanted to make sure that that was very clear in this bill as well. This afternoon, I wanted to introduce my colleague that's with me from the department. Dwight French is our water rights administrator. He had a couple of comments as well. This program resides in his division, and I believe he's also brought some statements of support from other folks to share.
Great. Thank you, Dwight.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Dwight French, I'm the water rights administrator at the department. And I believe you have in front of you two emails of support from CWREs. And earlier today, I believe you received a letter of support from our partners in this bill, OSBEALS. And I just wanted to add that this statute was first passed in 1987, hasn't been changed since. So a little bit of what we're doing here is kind of truing up this almost 25-year statute with OSBEALS legislation that was redone in a big way in 1999 when they became a semi-independent agency. So we're just kind of getting things trued up so that everything lines up nicely. But if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them. Thank you.
Okay. Why don't I let the committee ask questions, and then I do have a few. Any questions? Senator Thompson.
So, are they... these folks required to take so many hours of training per year, or would this dictate so many hours of training and sessions throughout the year? How would that work, or how does it work already?
So thank you for your question, Senator, members of the committee. So I've talked to OSBEALS, of course, quite a bit about this continuing education, or as they call it, professional development hours. And surveyors and engineers are currently required to take 30 hours of training every 2 years in order to renew their license, their land surveying or engineering license. And 10 hours have to be specific to whatever their underlying certificate is. So, but they are not required to have any professional development hours in the area of water rights or the CWRE part of what they do. So the bill would allow OSBLs to develop rules to require professional development hours specifically on the water rights piece. And we're confident that we can do that in a way so that any of these licensed individuals don't have to garner any more development hours in any two-year period. It could still be within the total 30 hours that they're required to get.
Yeah, because 30 hours in 2 years is quite a bit of training time, really. Okay, thanks.
And I have a follow-up question on that. You said engineers are surveyors, so is it a separate requirement if they're a registered geologist or a hydrogeologist?
Geologists are governed by a separate board, and they do not currently have requirements that require a professional development hour kind of requirement. So,
so this would be an additional if they were a certified water rights examiner?
Yes. Yes, this would be an additional requirement.
Okay. And how many hours a year or every 2 years will be added, do you know?
Well, we're going to develop that in rule. I've talked to OSBLs about it. It's not our intent to have a CWRE even come to the trainings that we provide, but if the number of hours we've been talking about is maybe 6 to 10 in a two-year period, so I think there's ways to put training materials online, whether it be readings or even video of the trainings that we do provide, and those trainings we do provide, we do provide them, give CWREs an opportunity to come to that training in different areas of the state, so they don't necessarily have to come to Salem. But we want to make it easy and do it in a way so it works for CWREs and provide some efficiency in the work that they do and our work as we review the work that they provide us.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other questions?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Yes. Senator Olson.
Have you had problems in the past with poor CWREs?
Senator Olson, I'm glad you asked that question. By and large, no. Occasionally, we do have to ask CWREs for clarification or more information. I don't think of that as problems or wrongdoing or anything like that. A few years ago, there was a complaint to OSBLs about a consultant who was doing CWRE-like work, but he wasn't putting his stamp, and there was some folks concerned that he was doing CWRE work. We met with OSBLs, and we determined together that this professional, this person, consultant, was not doing CWRE work. But in that investigation, OSBLs discovered that the authorizing statutes that we want to tweak here and their other operating statutes did not line up. And so OSBLs determined that they didn't have authority to go after this person if, in fact, he had been doing work without a license. And so that started our continuing discussions about, hey, one of these days we got to get this statute, you know, trued up so that it matches your other statutory authority. And when we developed the idea of the professional development hours, it seemed only right to true up this area of the statute as well.
When did that problem take place? How long ago?
That's 4 or 5 years ago.
Another follow-up question?
Yeah, I just being new to the process, it amazes me that the difficulty that it takes government to move forward when they find the problem. And if it's taken 4 years to put this bill together, I just kind of wonder why.
Well, Senator Olson, I, you know, the As I mentioned, the problems or wrongdoing is really not something that we see. This was kind of an isolated case. More recently, there was a person who had not, we were trying to work with to get their, to get some questions answered on the CWRE claim that had been submitted, and he was non-responsive. So Osbiel's began an investigation that eventually resulted in that CWRE's relinquishment of his license. Now, the investigation wasn't done under the statute. He had other professional responsibilities under his land surveyor's license that Osbiel's used to go after him. So even then, it wasn't really a it's just another example. I guess there's two, but it has taken us quite a while to get here, and this is, as you'll see in the legislation, there's more than one thing that we're trying to get fixed up here, and I guess I would say it was convenient for us to have multiple things that we wanted to get fixed up.
Thank you.
And I will note that there's some letters from some CWREs that are supportive. Have you gotten other input? I don't know. I'm assuming if you're going through rulemaking, obviously you're going to have a broad public input process, but have you heard other, I mean, we have two right here. Have you heard from other CWRE folks' response?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in the past year, during our CWRE workshops, I personally spoke to 80 different CWREs and explained, this was in the fall, explained our bill concept and shared the legislative concept at that time, explained the need for it, and had a lot of verbal support in those meetings. Not one person said that they didn't agree or didn't want us to go forward. Had lots of good discussion about the way that the department could help put the training, as I mentioned, either online or through readings or those kinds of things. So we had some good discussion, not one detractor.
All right. Any?
Sure.
Yes. Senator Olson?
If implemented, when will this take effect and how soon will the training begin?
Senator Olson and members of the committee, I don't believe there's an emergency clause on the bill, so I believe it'll become effective in very early 2012. So I'm not sure if Osbiel's will develop, get the rulemaking done by then, but they may be able to. We provide three-quarters of a day of training every fall to CWREs, and we'll be working on putting either videos or readings on our website.
Sure.
So that's just CWREs would not be required to have professional development hours until after the bill becomes effective. The rules will be in place hopefully about the same time. It might have a two-year, you know, because they re-license CWREs on a two-year rolling schedule. So it'll be implemented soon, but it'll have to come into play in that two-year rolling cycle.
Okay, thank you. One thing you'll learn is government does not move swiftly, unfortunately, but I do appreciate you bringing this forward. I want to find out if there's anybody else who would like to testify on this bill besides the agency folks. Okay, seeing none. Any other questions before I close the public hearing? Okay, close the public hearing on Senate Bill 126, and I'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 126, and we'll entertain a motion.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Przonski.
I move Senate Bill 126 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Przonski moves Senate Bill 126 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
Yes. Yes.
Chair Dinkle. Aye. So the motion carries 5-0, and this is the fun time when we get to assign a bill carrier. And since we have two new members that have not carried a bill yet.
The one with Molson.
I was going to say that typically as new members, you guys get the first bills that come out. And Senator Olson, as my vice chair, would you have the honor of carrying the first bill out of this committee?
Well, my understanding is that the first bill you carry, you get hazed on.
No, we don't necessarily do that in the Senate.
It's only a matter of time, either now or later.
Madam Chair, that's why I think that was an excellent choice.
Okay, thank you, Senator Olson. So please note that Senator Olson will carry the bill to the Senate floor, and our able staff will assist you, and I'm sure that your staff will as well on that, and appreciate you taking that on. So with that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 126, and we'll go ahead and open up a hearing on Senate Bill 122, and Beth, if you can provide us an overview.
Chair Dingfelder, members, Senate Bill 122 would authorize the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries to enter into contracts or agreements with a person, public body, or the federal government, pursuant to which the agency performs geoscientific surveys or analyses, directs the Governing Board of Dogami to adopt rules establishing criteria and procedures by which the department enters into such contracts and agreements. In your packet, there is a staff measure summary, no revenue impact, and a minimal fiscal impact, no statement issue.
Okay. Thank you, Beth. And with that, we have a couple of folks that want to come up and testify. We have the director, Director McConnell.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder and committee members. Before I start on this, I did want to make one quick comment on the work that's being done on the integrated water strategy. For the record,
yes.
Vicki McConnell, the director of the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. I just wanted to say that the four agencies that have been assigned to work on that have really reached out to the other natural resource agencies, both whenever they were doing their outreach and keeping all the directors completely involved in what's going on and taking comments and working with everyone. It's really been a great effort, and I do applaud them for that.
Great. Thank you for your comments.
Going on to Senate Bill 122, thank you very much for considering this bill and taking my testimony today. With this legislation, what we're interested in doing for Dogami is to broaden our statutory authority so that we can enter into project partnerships with non-governmental and non-academic entities. And I want to leave you a little bit of background on what exactly that means. My agency has two primary programs. We have one program that is what's called the Geologic Survey and Services. That is our science-based program. This is where we do our geoscientific work for the benefit of the state. That involves everything from basic geologic mapping to geological hazards characterization and mitigation, working with emergency response activities and emergency preparedness, what has to do with geological hazards, managing the tremendous amount of geoscientific data that the state has acquired over the 75 years that we've been working on our mission. And we generally do that with a mixture of discretionary general fund if we're working on mandated programs or projects, and also primarily going into contracts with, right now, governmental or academia. So, for example, we may have the city of Astoria, who has had a tremendous amount of issues with landslides lately, comes to us as the state geoscientific agency, and we develop a landslide susceptibility map for them, based on the data that we have and the additional mapping and work that we do. So we have the statutory authority to be able to enter into an intergovernmental agreement with them to provide that work for them. However, we do have, in particular, one program. It's called our Oregon LIDAR Consortium, which is a program to collect and process and make available to all Oregonians very accurate elevation data. And We generally do that by taking a little bit of leveraged funds from the state and turning that into a larger leveraged project that everyone pays into, and the folks that could pay into it could be Bureau of Land, it could be the federal agencies, could be cities and counties, could be
developers.
Well, that's where it is. It can't really be right now. We can only enter into agreements with intergovernmental agencies and academia. So if we have, when we're developing these consortia, a entity, and I'll give you a couple examples of folks that we have had to work with in a different way, or Eugene Water and Electric, Northwest Natural Gas, Ormet Technologies, Alta Rock, those are both geothermal exploration companies, Sun River Owners Association, and the Nature Conservancy have all been, when we were at one point, time or another, gathering LIDAR data in their areas, interested in being involved in the consortia. But we cannot accept contracts with them. We cannot go in contracts with them at this point. And so what we have done in the past is ask a city or county if they would work the contracts through their ability to contract, and then we can partner with them in a kind of secondary way. I don't consider that particularly transparent, and it takes a lot of, not a lot, but it takes extra administrative work to be able to do that. And so we are respectfully asking if we could change our authority to include what we call not-for-profits in the private sector then, as who we could enter into contracts with. Now, I want to make it very clear, these are project-oriented contracts. They have nothing to do directly with any regulatory work that we do. We have a regulatory program. That's the Mineral Lands Regulation and Reclamation. We regulate mining and both gas and oil and geothermal exploration and development for wells, but those regulatory programs are all fee-based, and they are, if we need to change a fee, we have to come back and change a different set of statutes than what these statutes that this covers. So there would not be a crossover into affecting our fee-based programs. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions or comments on
this.
Thank
you, Vicki. Can you just explain to the committee members who aren't familiar with LIDAR what its end uses are? What you talked about collecting data, but
right. Why
would a city or county or another organization be interested in contracting with the state to obtain this data?
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder and committee members. And I'll try to keep it to a minimum. LIDAR is a remote sensing technique for, again, collecting digital elevation data at a very accurate, to where we're talking within centimeters of what the actual vertical distance is, and within less than a meter of where horizontal is. So when you process those data, if you're looking at just the bare earth, if you think of a topographic map, which we're all familiar with, they show you where elevation is. Those really right now are only accurate to about 10 meters, about 30 feet. If you really, in this day and age, want to know accurately what your elevations are, and those are used by cities and counties from everything from developing certain ordinances to estimating the amount of stormwater runoff that they're affected by the areas in their town that's impervious to stormwater. I mean, the uses are really quite broad. Watershed restorations use all of that so they can identify where the elevations, where your drainages are. They're used for developing stream centers, for looking at the floodplains, and particularly ancient floodplains, so that you can know where the actual floodplain histories are. We look at it, of course, we're looking at it to find areas where there's known landslides, earthquake we can actually see earthquake fault scarps that you may not be able to see under all those blackberry bushes. So it has a tremendous amount of use, and we keep finding more and more uses and more entities that are interested in the data. Now, again, I do want to stress with the LIDAR data, it is not survey data. So it is not used by cities or counties for example, developing tax lots or anything. That's still, you have to go out there and actually do land surveying to determine that kind of detail.
Thank you. I think that's helpful for those folks who haven't been working closely with the LIDAR issue as we have. And also, sir, it's being used for seafloor mapping.
Chair Dean Fandler and committee members, it is a similar type. That's bathymetry, but it's very similar. And what we're really looking forward to is being able to meld the terrestrial LIDAR with the seafloor mapping so that we have a seamless elevation information all the way into the marine. So
it'll
be very exciting.
Any other questions for the director? We do have another witness as well. Senator Przanski.
A couple of questions. I assume that this service would be for fee because you would want to contract with whoever would want that service. Can you tell us about how that would be structured in the sense of are our rates going to be competitive or less than what would be offered in the open market?
Chair Dingfelder and Senator Przanski, actually the way that we do for the LIDAR data, for this the LIDAR consortia, what we do right now as the state manage, what we're doing is managing a state program. We have we have gone out for a competitive RFP bid with the private sector. We don't collect those data ourselves. We actually the monies go through us to the private sector for most of the data collection and development. And what the consortia were able to do is when we are able to pool a whole group, large area of funds and what we call a large area, surface area of interest, we get the best deal available then through that contract that we have with the private sector. So, for example, if you are collecting LIDAR data on just a few square miles, say the size of the city of Damascus or so, you can pay as much as $5,000 a square mile. If city of Damascus goes together with surrounding county and other entities, et cetera, then we generally can get that down to about $500 a square mile.
Okay.
So
thanks for the clarification.
Okay. Senator Olson?
Yes. You just mentioned you don't do LIDAR yourself. The state doesn't do it. Someone, an outside agency does it, a private agency?
Senator Dingfelder, Senator Olson, let me clarify. The actual data collection, which is the remote sensing where they're going out, is the private sector industry. They go out with their airplane. They collect the raw data. They do some of the initial processing of that. They deliver us a product, which are what's called the point cloud, all of these XYZ points, and the process data, but it has not been QA/QC. It's not been quality assured or quality certified. We have a program internally that does the quality assurance on those data, and if it doesn't pass, then it goes back to the vendor, and they have to refly that area for us, and then we finish the processing and the packaging of it to make it available for folks to use in the state.
Is this process available on the private market? By a private contractor.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, the initial processing?
All of it, the entire package.
The quality assurance, quality control, not so much. You could pay for a private consultant, I suppose, to do that. I think we'd be very competitive with what it would cost for that type of service. One of the reasons that we like to do it with in-house and is that we are collecting these data across the state, and that means they're seamless, they're all to the same quality assurance, and they're all to the same resolution. So we end up with a database that is useful, completely useful across the state in a seamless manner.
So when you bid this and you go out to get this consortium, do you compete directly with any private business at all?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, and committee members, no. Not for the consortium part, no. But we already had in place a contract to whom we were going to be contracting with for collecting the initial LIDAR data.
Okay, could that group that you contracted with, could they have gone out in the private sector and got it themselves?
Again, Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, I don't see anything that would have stopped them from doing that other than how to administer the program and deal with the administration and the contracting and the QAQC.
Okay. And then one final question, ma'am. Who has oversight over the funds after you collect them? Is that solely going to remain in your committee, in your group, or would we have oversight over the dispersal of those funds or the use of those funds?
Again, I guess I need some clarification. Do you mean those funds particularly in the LIDAR consortia, or are you talking about in general for the if we were in a contract?
In general, because you want to contract with other agencies and private entities, and you would be on a fee basis, and so you're going to collect those funds. So would you control those funds exclusively? Would they go to the general fund? Or do we have oversight over those funds?
Well, Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, we don't control them exclusively. They're considered other funds, and so they don't go to the general. They're not in general fund, but they're in our the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries account within the state treasury. I mean,
I can try to answer that. Those of us who sit on the Ways and Means Subcommittee, the Budget Subcommittee, we review other funds in addition to the general
That's
funds,
correct.
And that is part mm-hmm. of their budget. Regarding the specifics of how that is administered, there are audits through the Secretary of State's office that would look at those accounts and make right. sure they're being dispersed and spent the way they're supposed to be spent.
That's correct. I mean, we again, as for further clarification, even though general fund whenever we submit our budget, both on the executive side and then on the legislative side, it's a full review of what you're expecting or what you are going to get for general, what you're asking for general fund revenue, but also what you expect for other fund revenue and federal fund revenue. So the oversight is there. The audits would be, and we do get audited by both federal agencies if we're working with them and others, you know, other contracting agencies have the right to audit us as well.
Thank you for your candor. I appreciate it.
One last question, and then going to call up Rich Angstrom, who would also like to testify. I just want to clarify, so if a private entity was doing this, in my understanding, unless they're being paid to fly the entire state, they're not necessarily going to be flying the entire state. I mean, part of the whole LIDAR project is so we get a snapshot, a better picture of our, like you said, topographical layout of the state.
Right.
Being a planner, I know our floodplain maps are woefully outdated, and if we have the LIDAR information, it's much more accurate, and especially looking at potential areas of inundation floodplain. So part of my understanding is also the LIDAR consortium that's been working is so we have uniform coverage around the state. Otherwise, if somebody's interested in a certain area, they may pay to fly just one area that somebody is looking at developing, or if a city or county is particularly interested. And it sounds like that's part of how the cost has been driven down, partially by having the more consistent statewide coverage.
And that's correct, Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee, is there's nothing to stop a city or a county or anyone to go out and hire a private entity, a private consultant, and have the LIDAR flown. And there have been patches of it flown around the state by other entities. What we're offering that is a little extra for that is that with our QAQC process and with doing this in as seamless as we can across these areas of interest, everyone gets that seamless data. They get it at a very high resolution. We do the work on making sure they're getting what they pay for. And so that's the value added that we offer for these.
All right. Thank you for that clarification. Rich, you want to come up and add anything? I'm sure you'll be value-added to the conversation.
I hope. Good afternoon. My name's Rich Angstrom. I'm the president of the Oregon Concrete Aggregate Producers Association. This is our parent agency, and I'm here to testify in favor of this bill. Just on the whole LIDAR discussion that was going on before I go into some specifics here, I think all of us should look at this from our hiking days when the maps we first got were all, you know, USGS maps, and you know they had the lines. And you may have a road in there if you were lucky, you know, and we'd be up in the wilderness trying to hike around on those things. And then aerial photos came out, and that was definitely added value, and it certainly helped keep me from getting lost in some of my hunting expeditions. And then Google Earth came along, and now I can see a very coordinated picture of the whole state, and I can scout and figure out where the ducks and the deer and wherever I want to hike are. And the next evolution of that really is the LIDAR, because it gives you such refined detail. It's just amazing what's produced. And yes, we can. Our guys, if they want to develop a gravel site as an example, may fly a LIDAR because they may have an issue with DSL or Dolgami that they need that kind of resolution. Fortunately, if it's already been done by the state, because they're trying to handle it on a real broad, consistent state perspective, we'll just be able to pull it out of their database. So, you know, that's kind of puts it in a little more broader context, that at least for me to help understand it. This bill, though, is about, for our purposes, is about receipt authority. And last session, if folks remember, OCAPA sponsored the receipt authority bill for DSL. And why these are important is they allow important partnerships to happen between agencies and between nonprofits like ourselves and agencies to help get very critical, important scientific data that we're making decisions on. Now, I know that this isn't anything that affects directly a regulatory, it's not for a regulatory purpose, but it does and it can affect a regulatory result. And I wanted to give you an example to kind of drive the issue home why this is important. We've been engaged, and many of you know, on the coast trying to determine how much aggregate we can get out of the rivers on the coastal river systems. And it's a huge effort with NOAA Fisheries and U.S. Fish and EPA and the Corps, and then every state natural resource agency seems to be involved in local governments. And what the issue came down is that we were going to be able to get a certain percentage of the rock that was being recruited into the river system. We couldn't take more rock than what was coming into the river because it would have adverse impacts to fisheries and the recovery of the fish. And so what we decided to do is for this broad coalition and work with USGS to kind of keep it neutral. And then what USGS did is worked with Dogami to get some LIDAR data. And from that LIDAR data, we had the river flown, and it was coordinated on some activity that they had going on at the same time. Everybody saved money. And we were able to figure out the elevations and how much rock was in the river system. And we could do it over periods of time now. In fact, part of the monitoring will be LIDAR flights because we can get that fine of resolution. And from that, USGS issued a report based on good, solid science of how much rock would be available. Then the fight began with NOAA Fisheries of how much we got, which they won. We got very little. But the point is those are kinds of partnerships that make sense. They work. It allows the department to have receipts authority to be able to collect funds to have some of these things done. And it's a win-win for all. So with that, there would be one other example that might come out of this kind of thing, and that is, and this is just a kind of a future thing for you guys to think about. Many of you folks that have been around here have watched the agricultural community over farmland and the aggregate community fight over how much the natural resource land zoned EFU that we can have. And there's questions that come out of that that take a hard scientific look from a very broad perspective. And this allows the department to collect funds maybe from OCAPA and from the Farm Bureau, nonprofits, which would be defined under here, to be able to take some money from us to be able to go out and do that broader scale work that it doesn't affect any one permit. It affects a broad industry interests. And those are the kinds of things I'd like to say to the committee. are worthwhile efforts. And whenever you see bills coming in that are partnership bills and that can be used usefully like this, they need to be embraced. And this is one of those bills that does that, and I'd encourage you to pass this bill because it's going to be useful for all of us.
Great, thank you. Any other questions? Or comments? Any other questions? Okay. And I also, one thing you did touch on briefly, but the earthquake, for the capacity for looking at potential earthquake areas, and we all know that Oregon has lots and lots and lots of faults. We've had an experience on the coast where there was a development built and then later found out that it was built on a fault that might have been avoided if we had LIDAR at that point.
Right. And Chair Dingfield, that's very true. And I'd love to just go on and on and on about the science of this, but you can look at some of this. But actually, when you the incredible thing about these data is when we call the bare earth, and it strips off everything except the bare earth, and you can actually see a 6-inch high fault scarp running across the landscape that's underneath all those blackberries that there's no way you're going to find if you're out there mapping.
Well, it's a long way from when I did remote sensing and stereoscopes, so that's all I can say.
Thank you.
Pre-computer. Okay, would anybody else like to testify on this bill? Okay, seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 122. I will open up a work session and entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I would like to move Senate Bill 122 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Great. Senator Thompson moves Senate Bill 122 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, so with no further discussion, seeing none, the clerk will call the roll. We have a new clerk. Clerk in training, okay. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hatz?
Aye.
Senator Brzezinski?
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Dingfeld?
Aye. The motion passes, and let's see, who would like to carry this bill?
Oh, my gosh, let's think about this.
Oh, Senator Thompson, would you like to be the carrier for this bill?
Not really. No, I would.
Okay. Well, Senator Thompson has volunteered graciously to carry this bill.
Very graciously.
And with that, we'll look forward to hearing your detailed explanation about LIDAR on the floor.
Yes, thank you.
And but seriously, thank you for carrying that. I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 122. We are done for the day, gentlemen. Thank you very much for your attention. We'll want to note we're getting out early in our first meeting, and look forward to seeing you on Thursday. Beth, do you have any other comments?
That's it.
Okay, stay tuned. We have more agendas that are being posted for next week. And with that, we'll close the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources for today.